This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's a special focus on pain. And recently, in order to keep my prescribing privileges, I was required to undergo training in prescribing opioid medications. Now, I rarely, if ever, prescribe these medications. I'm an integrative, nutritionally oriented doctor. But I said to myself, hey, you know, I want to preserve my ability to prescribe them should I ever need to. And oh, by the way, maybe this, you know, 3-hour learning module will provide me with some interesting knowledge that I can impart to my patients and to my listeners. So the problem is so acute that they've required all the doctors in my state, New York State, to take a course to learn about the risks of opioid overprescribing and applying cautions to that practice. And that's to the good. So I registered for the course. I passed. I think I got a 90% on the final exam, and I now can keep my prescription pad in terms of being able to prescribe. This is not to say come to me so you can get your Vicodin, your OxyContin, or you know whatever, because I look for alternatives. But what they said was that there are certain patients who are really unlikely to benefit from opioid pain medication. First of all, people with poorly defined pain. If it's a pain of a fracture or something, that's pretty well defined. But if it's a pain like a fibromyalgia, that's not very responsive at all to opioid pain medication. Should never really be administered. For patients with these types of pain, where there seems to be a nerve pain component, it's useful to prescribe sometimes a certain category of antidepressants. Antidepressants may be helpful. Also, medications like Lyrica and Neurontin, these can be helpful, although these are vastly oversold. I have to say, I was excited to hear, there's these new medications that are really going to treat fibromyalgia. The vast majority of my fibromyalgia patients get minimal relief, and they get a lot of side effects. They feel drowsy. They gain weight because these medications increase their appetite. So these are actually pretty lousy medications for chronic pain. There's an old category of what are called tricyclic antidepressants. They were around before Prozac. Drugs like amitriptyline can be helpful for nerve pain. But they're pretty heavily sedating. They cause dry mouth. They cause urinary problems, retention. So they're not great either. Chronic daily headaches. That's really not a good, a rookie mistake. Doctors say, you need something really strong for your headaches. Oh my goodness. The patients who I see who have migraines, many of them are so addicted to pain medication that part of the problem is they have to detoxify, and when they detoxify, they get rebound headaches. So it actually, in a way, makes the problem more deep-seated and worse when you become addicted to your pain medications, and your headache comes back like gangbusters because of the withdrawal symptoms. And, it's not clear whether you're going through withdrawal or whether these medications were actually helping you. It's a real a conundrum when you see a patient on, 2-3 different medications, especially the types of medications that create addiction and dependency. And then there's what you might call the fortune cookie syndrome. which is, remember that movie with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau? It's about a guy who was on the sidelines in a football game, and he gets run over by a football player who's running out of bounds, and he hurts his back. But he's convinced by an unscrupulous lawyer this is going to be a great case. He's going to get, you know, thousands of dollars. And so he fakes it. So not all patients who have workman's compensation claims or unresolved legal issues are faking it. They have real pain. But by the very nature of their of the potential reward for being debilitated, they have an incentive to stay debilitated. And part of that debilitation is to require chronic medication. So you can get really ensnared in when you start prescribing medications for those types of patients. What they are now recommending for doctors to do is to undertake universal precautions. Now, universal precautions means when somebody comes and you draw blood on them, you assume the worst. You assume that they could have HIV, which is like one of the worst things that you can catch with a needle prick. So you have special precautions for disposing of needles. You wear gloves. You don't come in contact with blood. You just assume the worst, even if you don't know the status of the patient. Well, universal precautions can be applied to the addiction issue by assuming that all patients that you see have some degree of vulnerability to addiction. So you gotta assume the worst and be very conservative about prescribing medication. Now, it's a bind because, you know, the pendulum could swing too far. What if you have patients who have terrible cancer pain or patients who are near death with debilitating pain in agony from some terminal disease? And there, they say, make some compassionate exceptions, because what's the point if somebody's like at the end stage of cancer and, you know, they have bone pain from metastases to their spine or to wherever, they you know, feeling horrible, be liberal with the pain medication, because worst case scenario, let's say they become dependent on medication, they have a terrible prognosis, and so the weight of the argument goes towards pain relief and addressing their pain problem. And, you know, similarly, with pain that's related to cancer, especially when the prognosis of the cancer is poor, be very liberal and be a little bit less stringent with the guidelines about prescribing long-term, long-acting medications. You should ask, about a family history of substance abuse, as I said earlier. Make sure that the patient doesn't have any suicidal thoughts, because, you know, when you put a lot of these pain medications into the hands of someone who's suicidal, A, those medications can make them more depressed, and B, they're readily available path to exit for these patients. You got to be careful prescribing opiates to patients with respiratory problems, because if they've got trouble breathing, they could go into respiratory suppression and they could actually check out. You know, it's easy for those patients to die. Patients who have sleep apnea are particularly vulnerable to the effects of pain medication. So if you're going to be getting pain medication, you've got sleep apnea, please remind your doctor that you've got that condition. Patients with mental illness, of course, substance abuse, older patients, patients with kidney or liver problems. These are patients who you got to be careful, because if you're older and or if you have problems with your liver or kidneys, you won't eliminate the medication as quickly. If you're pregnant or pre-pregnancy, got to be careful, because you get hooked, your baby can get hooked. I mean, I've seen babies born in some inner-city hospitals during my training who literally went through withdrawal because they were stoned in the womb. And after being removed from the placenta that was supplying them with their fix, they went through all the classic symptoms of withdrawal. Also, new policy When you get pain medication, don't get pain medication from like three or four different doctors simultaneously. One doctor should be in charge. That's one of the reasons that I don't really prescribe a lot of pain medication, because I'm not a pain specialist. Somebody's got a chronic pain problem, go see a pain specialist. They're trained in this. They know the ins and outs of medication. Don't come to me and say, yeah, you know, just look, my doctor's out of town. Can you please give me something because, you know, I can't get in touch. I'm like, no, just do it with one doctor. And similarly, do it with one pharmacy, although they do have systems now for checking, you know, among the pharmacies, like via computer, to see if people are getting something from this pharmacy, something from that pharmacy, maybe something from out of state. There really needs to be a national program because people sometimes jump across from one state to another to get their meds. And please don't share your meds, and certainly take them as they're prescribed. Don't chew them, crush them, snort them. Don't abruptly discontinue them because you may go through terrible symptoms of withdrawal. And oh, by the way, you got kitties around? Store your medication under lock and key safely and dispose of your medication safely. Don't just throw them in the trash can where some, you know, there are people who go through trash and they could OD on your medication, or they could sell their medication so to the detriment of somebody else. Take the medication back to the pharmacy and let it be properly disposed of. So, all right. So, what's interesting to me is that in this module that I had to take, I've never seen this from a conventional source of medical information that they advocate alternative therapies. They say that things like Tai Chi, yoga, swimming, core training, these are great for the back. Even platelet-rich plasma, stem cells. Oh my goodness, how, you know, perish the thought that they're talking about innovative therapies. Topical capsaicin may be helpful, although there's no evidence that some of these menthol creams or some of these creams that have salicylates in them do much good for chronic pain. I mean, it's somewhere like a placebo effect. You rub them in, the skin feels cooled, or you get a little kind of a sting or a refreshed feeling in your skin. But ultimately, these medications don't do a heck of a lot to help your pain condition. And when it comes to acupuncture, they mention acupuncture as a possible help. And chiropractic should be on that list. But, you know, there's something, I think conventional medicine has a real attitude about chiropractic. They don't want to give credit to chiropractic as being a helpful modality for pain. Okay, now let's pause for a moment to let one of our sponsors share their information with you. Here it goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Okay, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They make it possible for us to share intelligent medicine with you. I recently reviewed the book Crooked, which is a book by an investigative journalist about all the modalities that are employed in the treatment of back pain. Many of which are futile or even harmful. And so the author is an investigative journalist who herself experienced back pain. And ultimately what she discovered is that the best remedy for back pain was not procedures, medications, surgeries, injections, but a very, very careful and properly supervised program of exercise and proper physical therapy for core strengthening and flexibility. And while I've not personally experienced such debilitating back pain or the need for surgery, I You know, I have to say that my back pain in my life was worse in my 30s than it is now in my 60s, because I've been engaging in a concerted program of stretching, yoga, core strengthening, and exercise that has actually ultimately helped my back. And no, I'm not pain-free at every instant. You know, I get my minor aches and pains. I work with a chiropractor who has helped me enormously with some chronic pain issues. I'm an athlete, and you know, perhaps I pushed the envelope and created some imbalances or some stresses in my body. But this particular chiropractor's focus is on sports medicine and on working with athletes to help them rehabilitate. And so over time, I actually had to give up running. And I asked him, well, you know, should it, now that I feel better, should I begin running? He said, definitely. You really want to see that this therapy that we're doing isn't just helping you in, you know, day-to-day activities, but that it actually has the ability to help you with more rigorous activities. We want to see if the progress that we're making is going to stand up to the kind of rigorous challenges that you want to put your body to. So I really would put my word in for a chiropractic treatment as part and parcel of the pain equation. When it comes to supplements, clearly there's benefit from omega-3 fatty acids. That's been demonstrated with back pain in a group of patients with back pain who are considered pre-op, destined for surgery. It was found that patients who took fish oil to the tune of 6 capsules per day for a period of 6 months, at the end of 6 months, half of them no longer required surgery. The other half, unfortunately, had whatever advanced disc disease that ultimately required surgery. Natural anti-inflammatories like bromelain, like curcumin, like boswellin can be helpful for chronic pain. Certainly, there's an argument to be made for diet when it comes to chronic pain. Many patients with rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis improve when they go on, in my opinion, one of the best diets for that is a salad and salmon-like diet or a Mediterranean diet, or perhaps even a more stringent paleo diet, eliminating dairy and wheat, and in fact, eliminating modern grains, which may be, for some people, poorly tolerated, and including lots of omega-3 fatty acids, lots of spices, a sort of a what we term an anti-inflammatory diet. We could do a whole podcast on what is termed an anti-inflammatory diet. But, if you're inflamed, the answer is not to take opiate pain medication. It's to change your diet. Vitamin D has some claim to fame in terms of pain. Vitamin C has some studies that support its use in relationship to pain. When it comes to muscular spasm, that is a component of some pain syndromes like back pain or fibromyalgia. Magnesium may have benefits. So there are a lot of natural approaches to chronic pain that really need to be employed. And I think what we really need is a revolution in our approach to pain in this country. Is that, first of all, our whole approach where we say, oh, if you're in pain, immediately prescribe. It's as if it's like elevated blood pressure. Pain is a vital sign. No, pain is not a vital sign. Pain is real. It's a real concern. It should be addressed, but it should not be addressed pharmaceutically like, the silent killers of like high blood pressure. It must be addressed, but it must be addressed more holistically. Now, while I'm talking about holistic approaches to pain, you can't do a segment like this without mentioning the work of Dr. John Sarno, who just passed away. Dr. Sarno was a day short of his 94th birthday. He was an iconoclast who worked at NYU in their rehabilitation medicine department. And he was a real iconoclast because it was his belief that the vast majority of pain syndromes are psychosomatic, or at least have a psychosomatic component. That's the thrust of his belief. But what he said was, and this is kind of revolutionary, he said, don't polish your pain. That's basically his message. And even sometimes when you undertake a holistic care for your pain, in some ways you're paying more attention to it and reinforcing it. And whether it's, you know, looking at an MRI and saying, oh my God, look at my spine. It's like, it's a disaster. Well, that imagery, if you internalize it, can lead to a nocebo effect, which promotes a belief in bad outcomes and a perpetuation of your experience of pain. And he was all for avoiding excess procedures, excess diagnostics, and his main modality was simply to talk to patients, give them a new orientation to their pain. It's kind of like a pain fix that he would do. A form of cognitive behavioral therapy. Reframe it. You know, look at it in a different way. Understand that, you know, you may be putting stress in a certain part of your body, whether you're a migraine sufferer, whether you suffer from irritable bowel syndrome, or his favorite condition, which was chronic back pain. And there are many, thousands of individuals who either undertook his therapy one-on-one or in a class setting, because ultimately he had so many patients that he put them into classes and did group sessions with them, or read his books, like Healing Back Pain. It was a bestseller, much maligned by the medical profession, who believed that he was overdoing the claim that pain is psychosomatic. Nonetheless, he made an outstanding contribution to pushing back against the objectification of pain and its overzealous treatment. And I think his perspective is definitely worth considering in any discussion of pain problems. If you are suffering from a chronic pain problem, I recommend highly that you get a book by John Sarno. And even if there's, in part, a serious organic basis to your pain, you know, like a crushed disc or a chronically deformed ankle bone, still, I think you need to incorporate his perspective in the management of your chronic pain problem.
Of course, it goes without saying that we need to give a nod to yet another alternative pain-relieving modality, which is cannabis. And I don't necessarily mean smoking pot, although just plain marijuana smoking has been associated with relief from some symptoms. But clearly, smoking marijuana can change lung function. It can also impair motor coordination and judgment, leading to accidents. Long-term use may be associated with an amotivational syndrome. Think Cheech and Chong movies. It even reduces testosterone and libido in men over time. So fortunately, more research is being done on not so much cannabis or marijuana plants, but cannabinoids. The cannabinoid system in the brain mediates pain sensations. And it turns out that the primary pain-relieving cannabinoid is cannabidiol, or CBD, which isn't psychoactive. You can obtain preparations of CBD that have virtually all of the THC removed, maybe a small residue remains, but it's sort of a non-stoner way of addressing pain. Now, they've done some studies. The studies are of varying qualities, usually small, and they've been criticized because they may be of questionable quality. But there are some encouraging studies that support the use of CBD or various fractions derived from cannabis for pain, and also to help tide people over
as they withdraw from opioids. They did a review in 2011 of cannabinoids for chronic neuropathic pain, fibromyalgia, and rheumatoid arthritis. And they found that 15 of 18 trials demonstrated, quote, significant analgesic effects compared to placebo. And in some studies, cannabis has been used as kind of a bridge towards abstinence, helping patients on methadone maintenance treatment to reduce opioid withdrawal symptoms. And of interest, this is maybe just a statistical anomaly, but one argument for medical marijuana is that cannabis use has been associated on a statewide level with reduced rates of opioid overdose. It turns out that between 1999 and 2010, states with medical cannabis laws had a 25% lower average opioid overdose death rate, which may sound counterintuitive because, you know, you get introduced drugs into the pipeline, you think, okay, this might be a gateway drug to get people hooked on more powerful drugs. It turns out that when people have access to pot or to cannabinoids, it may actually help to reduce their craving for more powerful drugs and help minimize dependency. So there you have it. Yet another promising alternative to these powerful drugs that get people hooked and can create so much havoc.
Bottom line is that to be human is to experience pain at one point or another. When you stop experiencing pain, make sure that hold a mirror up to your breath and make sure you're fogging it, because especially past a certain age, pain is a ubiquitous phenomenon. And in this society, we're all too quick to reach for a panacea. The net result is that we have hundreds of thousands of people who are terribly addicted to pain medication. Their lives are ruined. This is going to have a huge deleterious effect on the moral fabric of our society. It really brings in the issue of crime, because we've also sponsored laws that are more lenient on drug offenders. You know, we say, look, these poor, we tend to think, well, these poor inner city young kids, you know, they were smoking pot, or they sold a few pills, or they sold like a dime of cocaine. And all of a sudden, they're like consigned for life to the prison system and parole system, and they're stigmatized, and they can't get a job because they've been criminalized. Let's decriminalize drug use. No, not a good idea, because, yeah, you know, there are innocent dabblers in medication who get busted, but people who deal drugs, we need stronger penalties, more disincentives for them to ply their ugly trade, because they are truly killing off our population, especially our youth. And we have to re-educate doctors, and we have to also curb the excesses of drug companies, who are all too happy to flood the marketplace with pain medications and conduct seminars for doctors saying, oh, you know, here's the latest, greatest drug. It's not that addictive. Oh, that's part of why they had these big lawsuits against some of these drug companies, because they made false claims. They said, oh, these drugs don't have very much addictive potential. They sent salespeople and a sales force out to the doctor's office saying, hey, this is a great pain medication, and the potential for dependency or addiction is minimal. No, that was not the case. These drugs were mainstreamed in a very deceptive fashion, and now we're reaping a very terrible harvest of social and medical problems as a result. So, okay, that's my dissertation on pain. It's a huge medical issue, and that's why I'm talking about it. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.